Imagine waking up tomorrow, grabbing your phone, and just systematically deleting every single app you have.
Oh, wow. Just a completely blank slate.
Yeah, exactly. No ride-sharing app, no banking portal, no airline tracker, just a blank screen. And this intelligence that, well, it already knows exactly what you need before you even ask for it.
It sounds like science fiction, honestly.
It really does, right?
Okay.
But welcome to the deep dive. Today is Tuesday, April 28th, 2026, and we are looking at this massive, I mean, truly massive architectural shift in how technology operates.
Yeah, the landscape is just totally transforming right now.
It is. And the stack of sources we've got in front of us comes from this really explosive morning report by Techint. They dropped six major industry disruptions basically all at once.
Which is a lot to process for a Tuesday morning.
Oh, for sure. So our mission today is to cut through that noise and uncover the hidden narrative connecting all of them. Because the theme today is breaking boundaries.
Right, breaking boundaries.
We're looking at how the world's major tech titans are just aggressively stepping out of their traditional lanes. They are completely blurring the lines between software, hardware, banking, and even global security.
Yeah. And you know, while each of these six stories in the Teshin report could easily dominate the news cycle on its own,
Oh, absolutely.
looking at them collectively, it really reveals this blueprint for how technology will govern our daily lives over the next few years.
Right.
We're witnessing companies fundamentally redefine their own corporate DNA. They aren't just, you know, launching new products. They are changing the underlying mechanics of how we interact with the digital world.
So to understand how these boundaries are being broken, I think we have to start with a software titan that's attempting what looks like, honestly, the ultimate hardware heist.
Ah, yes, the OpenAI smartphone.
Exactly. OpenAI is building a phone. And they aren't just dipping their toes in, right? They are building an AI-first device, and they're targeting mass production in 2028.
And I think the sheer scale of their manufacturing ambition is really what caught the market totally off guard this morning.
Okay, let's unpack this, because they are aiming to produce 300 to 400 million units annually.
That is just a massive number.
Right. Let's put that into perspective for a second. Apple, at the absolute height of its powers, ships around, what, 230 million iPhones a year?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So the supply chain details backing this up, they come from the highly respected analyst Ming-Chi Kuo.
And his track record is usually pretty spotless.
Exactly. So he says the silicon chips are going to be shared between Qualcomm and MediaTek. And OpenAI has apparently locked in exclusive manufacturing with Luxshare Precision Industry.
Which caused quite the ripple effect.
Oh, totally. The market reaction was immediate. Qualcomm stock jumped 13%, MediaTek climbed 8%, and Apple actually took a nearly 2% hit.
Wow.
But the hardware specs aren't even the wildest part to me. It's the user interface concept. They're calling it an app-free phone.
Right, which Sam Altman has kind of been floating the idea of for a while now. He calls it a quieter
Yeah, a
device.
quieter device. It basically uses a central AI agent that learns your behavior and just makes decisions on your behalf.
It is a complete demolition of the user interface we've relied on for, you know, the last 15 years.
Right.
Because since the original iPhone, we've basically been conditioned to act as digital project managers.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, like you want a ride, you have to locate the specific ride icon, tap it, input the parameters. You want food, you manage the food app.
Yeah, it's a lot of tapping.
OpenAI is betting that the app grid is a fundamentally archaic way to interact with a computer. So instead of a graphical interface with dozens of walled-off apps, an AI agent operates entirely in the background.
And it just communicates directly with the APIs, right?
Exactly, the application programming interfaces of those various services.
So, I like to think of it like moving from a library to a librarian.
Okay, I like that.
Right, like instead of making you walk the aisles, memorize the Dewey Decimal System, and find the exact book and page for your flight information.
You just stand at the front desk.
Exactly. You just tell the librarian what you need, and they handle all the logistics, pulling the data from the airline servers directly.
Yeah, it's seamless.
But hold on, let me push back here. 400 million units. Apple has spent two decades building the highest, thickest walled garden in tech history.
They really have.
So thinking OpenAI can just casually manufacture 400 million phones on their first try, it sounds completely delusional to me.
Well, what's fascinating here is why Apple should actually be nervous. It sounds delusional until you look at the flank maneuver they're executing.
Okay, what do you mean?
OpenAI doesn't actually need to convince a loyal iPhone user to give up their premium hardware. They already have a built-in user base of 500 million active ChatGPT users.
All right, half a billion people already use the software.
Exactly. And by partnering with Qualcomm and MediaTek, they're heavily signaling a highly competitive lower price point.
Ah, so they aren't going after the $1,000 market.
No, if they target the mid-range market, specifically the Global South, which, you know, Apple has historically ignored in favor of high-margin premium devices, they don't even need to steal Apple's customers.
Wow.
They just need to become the default brain for the rest of the world. It's a volume play designed to just completely bypass the existing hardware monopolies.
So it's basically a Trojan horse strategy.
Essentially, yeah.
They just need to get their AI librarian into the pockets of half a billion people.
Yeah.
And if OpenAI is trying to become this invisible librarian on your phone, they also need to fundamentally change how they operate as a corporate entity to support that scale, right?
Absolutely. Which brings us to the second major disruption in the report.
Right. The historic, totally exclusive marriage between OpenAI and Microsoft is effectively over.
Yeah, this is a seismic shift in the enterprise software sector. Yeah. OpenAI and Microsoft have officially rewritten their contract.
And Microsoft lost its exclusive rights to sell OpenAI models.
They did.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Not only does Microsoft lose exclusivity, but the highly controversial AGI clause has been completely deleted.
Right, just totally scrubbed from the contract.
And for those who might not remember, this was the clause that outlined what would happen to the entire commercial arrangement if artificial general intelligence-like, a machine essentially as smart as a human, was actually achieved.
Yeah, the original contract basically said, if we hit AGI, the technology belongs to humanity, and all these commercial licensing deals are just null and void.
And now it's gone. Just poof. Microsoft retains a non-exclusive license until 2032, and the revenue-sharing model now just relies on standard payment thresholds until 2030.
Instead of waiting for some elusive AGI milestone.
Right. So immediately, OpenAI is free to sell their models via Amazon's AWS and Google Cloud.
Which means the cloud computing war has just escalated dramatically. I mean, every single cloud provider is now going to be fiercely bidding to host OpenAI's models natively.
But let me push back on the optics of this for a second. They quietly deleted the rule that says all bets are off if we build a digital god. On the surface, isn't that just a quiet corporate cash grab so they can sell models to anyone, like military contractors, banks, foreign governments, without any ethical restrictions getting in the way?
Well, it is entirely understandable to view it through that lens, definitely.
Yeah.
But if we look at the actual mechanics of corporate law and enterprise sales, the real issue was definition. Like, how do you legally define artificial general intelligence?
That's a good point. It's pretty vague.
It is. It's a philosophical concept just as much as it is an engineering milestone. You can't put a highly subjective philosophical concept into a binding corporate contract without terrifying your investors.
Because they'd never know when the rug might get pulled out.
Exactly. Imagine being a Fortune 500 company trying to build a billion-dollar platform on OpenAI's models. You require a service level agreement, an SLA, that guarantees uptime and access.
Right. You need stability.
And the AGI clause was essentially a poison pill for SLAs. Mm. At any moment, an internal board could just declare, hey, we've hit AGI and completely invalidate your licensing agreements.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no bank is going to sign up for that kind of risk.
Right. So deleting that clause isn't necessarily about abandoning humanity. It's about standardizing the business model. It removes the existential legal uncertainty so they can actually function like a normal infrastructure company.
That reframes it entirely. They're shedding the sci-fi research lab identity to become basically the foundational plumbing of the global economy.
That's exactly what it is. Plumbing.
But while OpenAI is busy becoming the invisible infrastructure, consumer companies are aggressively trying to build the ultimate walled gardens on top of that infrastructure.
No, absolutely. Just look at what Elon Musk's X and Samsung are doing right now.
Right. We are seeing a massive coordinated pivot toward the super app model.
Yeah, this is an ecosystem approach that has dominated Asian markets for years through platforms like WeChat, but it's historically really strugged to gain a foothold in the West.
Well, let's start with X, because they just launched X Money in early public access for U.S. users.
Yes.
And the stated goal here is to turn X into a super app, where you don't just consume media, you conduct your entire financial life.
Yeah.
and the incentives they are throwing at the wall are staggering.
They really are.
X Money is offering a massive 6% annual yield.
6%?
I know. They have standard $250,000 deposit insurance, they offer 3% cash back, and they feature instant peer-to-peer transfers powered by Visa Direct.
And you even get a physical card, right?
Yeah. Users get a heavy metal debit card etched with their X handle. And notably, the report confirms there is no crypto involved yet. This is strictly fiat currency-like traditional government-issued money.
Which is a crucial distinction. They are not trying to build a speculative crypto casino here. They're actively trying to replace your Chase or Bank of America checking account.
Right.
But that 6% yield is what should really catch your attention. Because in the current economic climate, offering a 6% return is a massive loss leader.
Oh, totally. Traditional banks spend hundreds of dollars on marketing and, you know, sign-up bonuses just to acquire a single new customer.
Exactly.
So X is essentially taking that massive marketing budget and just paying it directly to you in the form of a 6% yield.
Right.
But the price you pay for that yield is handing Elon Musk real-time access to your transaction data.
And that's the real currency here.
Right. So I want to ask you, the listener, a direct question. Would you trade your financial privacy to a social media platform just to get a 6% return? Because that beats almost every traditional bank out there right now.
It's a tough question.
It really is. That is the exact psychological calculus X is banking on.
Yeah, it's a direct trade-off between privacy and yield. And, you know, if we connect this to the bigger picture, X isn't the only company trying to consume your daily routine.
True. Samsung just dropped a major update, too.
Right. Samsung Wallet Trips.
Yeah, this is Samsung's attempt to unify your chaotic travel life. It aggregates your flights, hotels, rental cars, just puts it all into one single predictive timeline.
Which sounds incredibly convenient.
It does. It auto-scans your emails for flights, it offers smart alerts for gate changes, and it even acts as a digital key for your rental car and hotel room.
Well, both X Money and Samsung Trips are playing the exact same game here. It's all about eliminating friction to achieve ecosystem lock-in.
Ecosystem lock-in.
Right. The friction of traveling usually involves constantly jumping between your airline app, your hotel app, your rideshare app.
Yes, scrambling at the airport terminal.
Exactly. By providing a unified timeline, Samsung is aggressively countering Apple Wallet's dominance to keep Galaxy users from ever leaving their interface.
Wow.
X wants to be your bank so you never leave their social feed. Samsung wants to be your travel agent so you never leave their digital wallet.
So they're building environments so endlessly convenient that the simple act of downloading a competitor's app feels like, you know, an unbearable chore.
That's the goal.
So we're talking about trading our data for convenience in our wallets and on our vacations. But when these same tech infrastructures cross over into the military sphere, the stakes go from personal privacy to global security.
Yes, this is a very different level of boundary breaking.
The Techin report details a leaked secret AI contract between Google Cloud and the U.S. Department of Defense. And this really forces us to look at the dual-use nature of this technology.
Yeah, this is undoubtedly the most heavily debated piece of news in today's stack. It touches right on the core of AI ethics and international security.
So, according to the leaked contract, the Pentagon is authorized to use Google's Gemini and Cloud AI for, quote, lawful purposes.
Right.
But here's the critical detail. The Pentagon has been granted the special authority to alter the AI's safety settings.
Which is huge.
It is. And we really have to look at the historical context here to see why this is such a massive shift. Back in 2018, Google famously backed out of Project Maven.
Right, the drone footage and analysis contract?
Exactly, because thousands of employees protested. And then in 2021, they dropped out of the massive GDI cloud contract for basically similar reasons.
Yeah.
But now, 8 years after Maven, they're back in the military sphere, but they're doing it quietly.
This raises an important question, and it perfectly illustrates the dual-use dilemma in advanced technology. You see, a traditional piece of software, like missile guidance code, well, it has a single use.
Right, it guides missiles.
Exactly. But a large language model is fundamentally general purpose. It can write a marketing email, or it can analyze satellite imagery for targeting data.
So, impartially speaking, what does this all mean? If safety guardrails like the core coding designed to prevent the weaponization of an AI can simply be toggled off for a military client, Do those guardrails actually mean anything fundamentally?
Right.
Or are they just consumer-level suggestions?
Well, to understand the government's perspective, we have to look at how these models function on a technical level. Consumer AI models are heavily weighted to refuse prompts that even hint at violence or harm. But in a battlefield scenario, the military argues they cannot have a critical intelligence system pause to deliver a lecture on safety protocols because it misinterpreted a tactical prompt.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be a disaster in the field.
Right. They argue that democratic nations must have access to raw, unfiltered computing power for national security. Otherwise, they'll simply be outpaced by adversaries who, frankly, do not impose ethical constraints on their own AI development.
Right, in an arms race.
Exactly. The military requires the flexibility to adapt the tool to harsh realities, which necessitates bypassing those consumer-level refusal protocols.
Okay, I see that side. And what is the argument from the industry advocates who are concerned about this?
Human rights advocates and AI safety researchers point out that creating a systemic backdoor to disable safety protocols essentially negates the entire discipline of AI safety.
Because the rule is broken.
Right. If you can simply adjust the model's weights to untether it from its ethical constraints, the AI becomes a potentially unpredictable variable in warfare.
Wow.
Furthermore, the procedural shift here is deeply telling. Unlike the vocal, highly public employee protests that halted Project Maven in 2018, Google is proceeding with this Pentagon contract without public fanfare.
Which signals a pretty definitive shift in the tech industry.
It really does. It signals that companies are now prioritizing highly lucrative government defense contracts over internal employee dissent.
That makes a lot of sense. So running military-grade AI simulations, predicting your complex travel itinerary, powering real-time financial super apps, all of this shares one absolute requirement. Right?
Yeah, SIF processing power.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Incomprehensible amount of secure computing power. And sustaining that level of power across billions of devices requires aggressively cutting dead weight.
Yeah, the inevitable cost of progress is, well, the digital purge.
Right. So on September 8, 2026, which is just about 4 months from now, Meta's WhatsApp is going to completely start working on Android 5.0 and 5.1, also known as Lollipop.
Which is pretty old software at this point.
Yeah, we're talking about phones that were manufactured back in 2014 and 2015. The tech report notes that this cutoff only affects 0.7% of global Android users.
Which sounds tiny.
It does. But because Android's global user base is so astronomically large, that tiny percentage translates to approximately 21 million people.
Yeah, 21 million is a lot of phones.
And the reasoning provided by Meta, it's pretty standard. Improving app security, optimizing performance, and mitigating the immense costs of maintaining compatibility with an operating system that hasn't received a security update in years.
Right.
So these users basically have to upgrade their OS to Android 6 or higher, or buy affordable new hardware, like a Redmi Note 13 or a Galaxy A15.
Well, to understand why this is happening right now, we have to look at the mechanics of digital security. Because it isn't just about the app running slowly.
Okay, what is it about?
It is about the fundamental mathematics of cryptography. Modern end-to-end encryption, the technology that ensures no one can intercept your WhatsApp messages, requires specific cryptographic libraries to handshake securely with the server.
Okay.
Digital security certificates expire. A 12-year-old operating system simply lacks the mathematical vocabulary to complete that secure handshake with modern servers.
So the phone literally cannot verify that the server it's talking to is actually WhatsApp.
Exactly. It's a structural failure.
But, I mean, 0.7% sounds like a rounding error in a corporate boardroom. 21 million people, though. That is the population of a small country suddenly waking up on a Tuesday in September to find that their primary communication lifeline has just been severed.
It's devastating for those communities.
Yeah, these aren't tech enthusiasts holding out for the newest folding screen. These are almost exclusively users in developing markets for whom a 2014 smartphone is literally their only gateway to the internet, their community, and their livelihood.
It's a stark illustration of the digital divide, honestly. But the cybersecurity reality is just unyielding. Every single workaround engineered by developers to make modern encryption function on an unsupported 12-year-old operating system creates a potential vulnerability.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it creates a backdoor that malicious actors can exploit to access the broader network. You can't build the secure future of AI-driven operating systems and financial super apps if your core infrastructure is eternally anchored to legacy code.
Right.
To protect the billions of users operating on modern devices, tech companies eventually have to enact this sort of digital triage.
You have to sacrifice the limb to save the body.
Exactly.
And that brings the underlying narrative of today's deep dive full circle. We are watching the architecture of the tech world literally rewrite itself in real time.
We really are.
OpenAI is attempting to bypass Apple's walled garden by building an app-free hardware agent for the masses, while simultaneously shedding its restrictive AGI legal clauses to become the dominant infrastructure for enterprise cloud computing. Meanwhile, X is buying your financial data with massive yields to become your bank, and Samsung is automating your travel to lock you into their ecosystem forever.
Which is wild.
Yeah, and Google is navigating the incredibly high stakes of military AI by quietly offering unfiltered models to the Pentagon. And underneath all of it, the foundation is shifting, cutting off millions of legacy devices to secure the immense processing power required to make all of this happen.
The traditional lanes of the tech industry are completely dissolving. I mean, the rigid boundaries that used to cleanly separate a social media network, a retail bank, a software developer, and a defense contractor, they simply do not exist anymore.
And that leaves us with one final thought to mull over after this deep dive ends. Today, we explored how central AI agents will soon run our phones without us ever tapping an app, and how financial super apps want to manage our wealth and travel with seamless predictive algorithms.
Right.
But if your future, quieter, OpenAI phone starts automatically managing your X money yield and rebooking your Samsung trips flights in the background without you ever lifting a finger, at what point do we fundamentally trade our own daily decision-making agency for the ultimate convenience?
That's a huge question.
It is. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah.
Keep questioning the world around you. Keep looking for those hidden narratives, and we will catch you on the next one.